Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome, everyone, to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, CPA, CFP, professional, and AEP. So there's something different tonight. Obviously, this is not Lori Siebert. Hi, everyone. My name is Rod Young. I'm a longtime associate of Lori's, and I am here tonight to co-host Your Financial Choices. Real quickly, we are on the web at www.yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online at www.wdiy.org. So Lori's on vacation, well-deserved vacation. Lori, we hope you're not listening tonight. We hope you're enjoying your time off. And with me co-hosting tonight is a longtime professional associate and great friend, Jackie Cornelius. Jackie, do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Rod. Yes, Lori, we hope you are enjoying your well-deserved time away. My name is Jackie Cornelius, as Rod said. I'm also an associate of Lori's and work at Valley National Financial Advisors. I am a certified financial planner and vice president, and I'm also an enrolled agent and have all the other necessary licensing for life insurance and my Series 7s as well. So it's great to be here this evening. Rod, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks. Yeah, I've done the show a number of times over the years with Lori and with Jackie and even bravely by myself. And I am a CPA and certified financial planner, a senior vice president at Valley National, and I've been at Valley National, time flies, 12 and a half years. And Jackie and I together spend a significant part of our time working with individuals and doing for their financial planning, their tax planning, investment advisory. And so the topic that we are going to talk about tonight is pension plans. And should you take that lump sum distribution or should you take an annuity from your pension? And that's something we talk about daily, weekly with clients. So again, going back to our topic tonight, it is pension plans, lump sums versus annuities. And we're going to talk about ways to evaluate and issues to think through with that decision. We are live tonight, and we can take your questions if you submit them online at yourfinancialchoices.com. When you go online there, there's a little button you can click that says Ask Lori. And then that question will, through the wonders of technology, get forwarded to us, and we'll do our best to answer the question. We do discuss general financial planning topics from week to week on this show. We don't address specific investment advice. While we have a topic each week, if your question is off topic, that's fine. We'll still do our best to try to answer it. So if something comes to mind, either from what we talk about tonight or something that's been on your mind unrelated, go ahead on yourfinancialchoices.com and submit your question through the Ask Lori button. Tonight we'll discuss pension plans. First, I thought maybe just a little bit of history on pensions here in the United States. I know that Social Security has been around, I think since the 30s, I believe. But I thought, and I know pensions go back, you know, much farther than that here in the U.S. So the first pensions actually go as far back as the Revolutionary War. There were government programs for veterans, you know, of the war. And that was common in subsequent wars for veterans of, you know, Mexican-American War, Civil War, that there were pensions. The first, aside from veterans' pensions, the first public pension, at least according to my research here in the U.S., was for the New York City Police Department, and that was back in 1857. And then the first private pension in the United States, again, according to my research anyway, from a U.S. corporation, came about in 1875, and I would bet every listener tonight will recognize the name of the company. It's a global company and a household name. American Express. So they are the first private pension in this country. To give you an idea, to get a pension in that original pension plan at American Express, it applied to individuals who had been with the company for 20 years, had reached age 60, had been recommended for retirement by their manager. I don't know quite what that means. Had then been approved by a committee and the board of directors for the pension, and with that, they could receive half of their annual salary in retirement up to a maximum of $500 per year. So that was a pension back in 1875. So, okay, I guess enough trivia, Jackie?
Sure.
And enough of listening to me talk?
No, I think it's always good to have a little background on, you know, kind of knowing where these started and where they came from.
Sure.
I'm happy to talk about, you know, more of the specifics as to what is a pension. I'm sure some of our listeners out there, you know, are well-versed in what a pension is, but others might not be. So a defined benefit plan, or as commonly termed a pension plan, is a retirement benefit that's provided by the employer. We'll give you a little bit of a comparison. Many of our listeners are familiar with what is a 401k. That's a defined contribution plan. And that is where a lot of times an employer or an employee will set aside dollars, and the employer may or may not also contribute dollars on the employee's behalf. But with a defined benefit plan, that is the employer's responsibility to fund a retirement benefit for an employee. A lot of times it's based on, as Rod alluded to, the American Express benefit. There were certain hurdles or requirements. One is typically age, and the second usually is years of service. There can be other requirements dependent upon each pension plan, but it usually is a formula, and every company has a different formula. They're similar, but different nuances. There's a slight variance of a pension plan called a cash balance plan. And we've seen these come up more recently as companies try to come up with, I'll say, new ways to help employees retire. A cash balance is still yet a defined benefit plan, but it actually has an account balance as opposed to just a set retirement benefit. So you actually can see the dollars kind of as you go along in your, you know, your career, your years of service at the company you've been at. With a cash balance plan, a lot of times the employer does a contribution as a percentage of pay, which is based, again, on a formula, typically age and years of service.
Yeah, and I've typically seen that as you have more, as you get older and have more years of service, the percentage of your pay that goes into that cash balance account increases.
Sure, absolutely. And I think, you know, when we take that step back and we say, okay, so we kind of understand what a defined benefit plan is. And these tend to be very rich. And when we say rich, there's a reason why we don't see a lot of pension plans being created nowadays. So I think it's important just to distinguish that because we might have a lot of listeners now that aren't sure.
Sure. We have a quick break and then we'll come back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets, on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. WDIY
Tune
thanks its
your
members
and
Valley
with
National.
A great variety of jazz music on WDIY Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11 offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Hello, everyone. Rod Young here on your financial choices here with Jackie Cornelius, both of us from Valley National, sitting in for Lori Siebert tonight. And we are talking about pension plans. And Jackie, you were, I'll turn it back over to you. You were just talking about defined benefit plans and a kind of a subset of that, cash balance plans.
Sure. So for our listeners out there, you know, one of the next, I think, most important questions is how do you know if you have a pension plan? I'm sure a lot of our listeners are, you know, inquiring, you know, how do you find that out? A lot of times you will be able to know if you have a pension plan, any type of pension plan, through your employee benefits. Sometimes you get an annual statement that'll kind of list out what your benefits are, could have your health insurance if that's something that's provided, but that's typically where you'll find it. You can always ask for additional details. A summary plan document will give you additional details. So who do we see these types of plans for? We typically see them for larger for-profit companies. However, as we indicated before, we do see the number of companies who offer defined benefit pension plans. Those numbers are declining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, companies have definitely made a shift over the past 20 years from these defined benefit plans to more of a defined contribution approach, you know, matching contributions to a 401k, profit sharing contributions to a 401k, as opposed to these promises to pay a fixed amount for someone's lifetime after they retire.
Sure, absolutely. But nonetheless, that we still do see them, I will say often enough that mm-hmm. at least Rod and I thought it was important to do a topic on it. We see them with school teachers. You know, we see, you know, where we are located is definitely in the state of Pennsylvania, state of New Jersey. But, you know, it's not limited to those two states. You know, nationally, there's a lot of teachers' pensions that still do exist. And teachers, we, you know, we do assist teachers who help have to make these decisions.
Teachers' pension funds in you know, New York, California, they're some of the biggest investment funds in the, you know, in the world.
Sure, absolutely. And then also employees in the public sectors. You know, so these are our government workers mm-hmm. and, you know, any of those jobs that fall under that type of heading, we see them having to make these types of decisions as well.
I just had a conversation with someone yesterday who has been retired for many years, but I won't name the company, worked for a large local company many years ago, early in her career, and brought up to me that she is turning 65 this summer and knows that she has a pension from this company, doesn't know a lot about it, but did remember the fact, because it's been, we're talking 30 years ago probably, that she worked there, but was there long enough to accumulate a pension. And I just casually started to talk to her about, okay, you're familiar with it at all? Do you understand what a pension is? And it was an eye-opener for her, just as I started to talk about the annuity options and maybe they offer a lump sum. And she was like, I had
No idea.
And I think she was going to get off the phone with me and call and try to get more more information
sure.
about it.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. And yeah. we see that all the time. Yeah. So I think another important point is, why is this relevant now? So, you know, as we've said, pensions have been around a long time. We don't see quite as many, we'll call it new offerings of pensions, but they still do exist. But why is this a relevant topic right now? Well, the reason Rod and I actually chose this topic for tonight was because of our current interest rate environment. So let's talk a little bit more about how our current interest rate environment can actually affect lump sum values, or even what a lump sum value is.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'd be glad to, you know, touch upon that. So when your pension is stated It accumulates and is stated in an amount that you will receive on a monthly basis for the rest of your life. If your pension offers a lump sum, pension plan offers a lump sum, it will take that monthly amount that you are being promised for the rest of your life, and based on actuarial tables, life expectancy tables, and to your point, Jackie, the current interest rate that's used to calculate the lump sum, it'll come up with a lump sum value, okay? The important thing here, the takeaway, is it's an inverse relationship between the interest rate and the lump sum value. The lower the interest rate, the higher the lump sum value. So as many of you may be aware, maybe not, we are in a very low interest rate environment. Mortgage rates are low. Banks aren't paying much on interest rates are low on savings account. Bond yields are low. We're in a very low interest rate environment. So this interest rate, the last couple of years and this year in particular, that these plans are using to calculate these lump sum values are very beneficial to the plan participant if a lump sum is available, because the lump sum is higher.
It makes a lot of sense. So some of our listeners out there may be asking, okay, well, if this is potentially a favorable environment right now for an employee or a retired employee, but one who's not yet necessarily taking their pension, it actually can also be beneficial to an employer. And the reason for that is it removes the liability from the company's books. So as we talked about, Rod alluded to the fact that some of the teachers' pensions are some of the largest pension funds in the United States. These are very large line items, let's say liabilities, on a lot of these employers' balance sheets. And sometimes employers, as they're making, you know, corporate decisions, it just makes sense for them to say, okay, now might be a good time to offer our employees a chance to take their lump sums and then remove it, so to speak, mm-hmm. from their books. You know, another thing is to shift responsibility. So as we indicated in the beginning of our conversation tonight, having a defined benefit pension plan is the responsibility of the employer. We've seen in recent years, you know, Rod said the past 20 years, we've seen that responsibility shift from employer to employee through plans like 403B plans or 401K plans, where the employee then has to choose whether or not they want to start setting dollars aside for retirement.
Yeah. And we've done shows in the past about those types of plans and how to maximize, you know, value in those.
So now that we kind of know why it's relevant, Rod, why don't you walk us through some of the different benefit options that are available to plan participants?
Sure. Most of these types of plans, if you just work for a company for 1 year, the chances are you're not earning the right to any pension. So typically, you know, 5 years of service is a minimal trigger that you've earned you are vested in the right to some future pension benefit. Beyond that, there are, you know, early retirement benefits that where you can maybe, depending on your age and years of service, at a certain point take what's called a reduced benefit, or maybe even an unreduced benefit, but prior to the plan's normal retirement age. A lot of plans in the past we've seen have like a rule of 80 or a rule of 85. If your age or years of service equal 80 years, you're eligible for an immediate unreduced benefit, things like that. So you see some of that. And then, of course, there's what I'll call normal retirement benefits that's commonly defined in one of these plans as age 65. If you leave a company early and you're not yet eligible for an immediate benefit, then you're basically eligible for what is commonly referred to as a deferred benefit. Like the person I talked about who I spoke with yesterday, had a vested pension benefit from many years ago, and that would be a deferred benefit. We're coming up on a break, and we will be back in a minute.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hello, everyone. Rod Young and Jackie Cornelius here talking about pensions and the idea of lump sums versus annuities. Keep in mind, if you have a question you would like to ask, I mentioned it early in the show, but if you jumped on listening after the beginning of the show, we are not taking calls tonight, but you can submit a question at yourfinancialchoices.com. And there'll be a button there that says Ask Lori, except for tonight you're asking Rod and Jackie. So feel free to submit a question if you have one. And in the meantime, we'll continue our discussion, regarding pension plans. And on the last break, Jackie mentioned to me that, just because you've changed jobs, changed employers, doesn't mean you have some way, once you have a vested pension benefit, that's yours for the rest of your life. You don't forfeit it by changing jobs. Okay, we've got vested benefits, possible early benefits, reduced or unreduced, normal benefits, immediate versus deferred. Your head begins to spin, which speaks to something you mentioned early on, Jackie, about you really, really need to educate yourself regarding, these benefits and what you're entitled to. I guess the next thing to discuss, should I dive into typical distribution options, Jackie?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. This is just part of continuing to understand really what questions you need to be mindful and asking when it comes to making these types of decisions. Yeah. So why don't you talk to us a little bit more in detail, Rod, about the different distribution options available?
Sure. And so we're going to make an assumption that the plan offers a lump sum. That's what we're talking about tonight. By the way, though, there are some plans that don't commonly offer a lump sum as part of their benefit, their distribution option. But periodically, they may come out to former employees that haven't started a pension yet and make an offer and say, you've earned the right to a vested pension benefit in the future. We're offering you a lump sum buyout, and you have, 30 days, 60 days to decide whether or not you want to take it. Very important to understand, if you elect a lump sum, once you receive that, you are not entitled to any future benefit from the company. You have now taken the money, and you are now responsible for it, and you are now responsible for investing and all of that. So, what are some of the options that are typically offered by these pension plans? So there are a variety of annuity, monthly payment options. The standard form of benefit, when someone talks about, my pension is $3,000 a month, that is what is known as a single life benefit. You commence it, and it pays just for the lifetime of the recipient. If the recipient dies, there is no remaining benefit to be paid to a surviving beneficiary, typically a spouse. Okay.
I don't think I'd like that very much if I was the spouse.
Exactly.
Are there any other options?
That's a great point, and that's a great point because there are actually protections in place for. For spouses that basically say that for the participant to elect a benefit that does not in some way provide for a surviving spouse, the spouse actually needs to sign a spousal waiver that they agree with that decision, and that spousal waiver needs to be witnessed by a notary.
So there's some safeguards for the spouse.
Absolutely.
So if a participant would elect a lump sum, just know that there's other possible requirements. To your point about going back to completing paperwork that has to be done in 30 or 60 days, just making sure they read through that thoroughly to understand all that's required.
Absolutely. And the spouse is going to need to sign off on a lump sum distribution as well. So, but then there are joint and survivor options. They are commonly referred to as JNS, joint and survivor. And you'll hear them stated in terms of percentages. So the most common options are 50% joint and survivor, or let's say 100% joint and survivor. We also see 75%, 66 2/3%, period certain with survivor options, but the most common that we see really are like 50% and 100% joint and survivor options. So what that means is, so in that example earlier where I said $3,000 a month for your lifetime, nothing to a beneficiary, if you were to elect a 50% joint and survivor option, your monthly pension might be $2,700 a month, because now the pension is promising to pay possibly over two lifetimes, yours and your beneficiaries. And so in a 50% example, that $2,700 a month is paid while you, the pension recipient, is alive. And then if you predecease your beneficiary, the beneficiary receives 50% of that amount for the rest of their life. So that $2,700 would be $1,350 a month to the beneficiary or surviving spouse.
That makes sense.
That's why a 50% joint and survivor works. A 100% joint and survivor, fairly similar. Again, now it's going to be an even smaller monthly amount while the participant is living. So maybe it's going to be $2,400 a month. But when the participant passes, if they predecease their beneficiary, the beneficiary continues to receive $2,400 a month for the rest of their life.
So there's a greater haircut because the ultimate 100% joint and survivor annuity is paying potentially over a longer period of time.
Much longer period of time. So those are the options that we commonly are talking about. We have these joint and survivor options. You know, if you're unmarried, single life, right? Or lump sum. That's a pretty basic decision. Mm-hmm. But if you are married, you've got more complicating decisions to go through. So those are the typical distribution options. And we do see some plans that offer what I'll call a hybrid, where part of it you can take in a lump sum and part of it you can take in an annuity. And it's all math. And at that point, it's just if they offer you 50% of it in a lump sum, then those annuities are going to drop by one half. So, typically, when we talk beneficiary, we're talking, you know, talking spouse, not children. We are coming up on a break, and we will return momentarily.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shawnee Gray. It is now 6:30 and 70 with cloudy skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight, we're going to have thunderstorms, low around 62. Thursday is going to be high 80, sunny. Thursday night, low around 52. Friday, you can have a chance of rain, high 63. Friday night, low around 48. And for your Saturday, high 62 and rain. Saturday night, low 47. Now, back to your financial choices.
I am not having fun with that holiday weekend forecast. At least the early part of it here, I have to tell you. So,
it's not looking too good.
So, Rod Young again on your financial choices here with Jackie Cornelius, talking about pensions, throwing out, I know we're throwing out a lot of information here. If you have questions, please go ahead on yourfinancialchoices.com, click on the button, ask Lori, and please feel free to submit a question. I'm going to turn it over to Jackie, because I've been talking probably too long now, and we'll continue the pension discussion.
Sure. So we talked most recently about the pension benefit options and distribution options. So really now let's talk about the main question, which is how do you decide all this? So we've kind of talked about where to get the information, you know, to go to either your HR department, human resources, employee benefits. You now have it in front of you. You may even have something called, we refer to it as a pension packet. Kind of outlining all these different options, but how do you actually start evaluating them? And what are some of the characteristics of when it might make sense to take an annuity and when might it make sense to take a lump sum? Well, in theory, all the options actually are actuarially equivalent. So there's no necessarily, on the surface anyway, there's no wrong answer, so to speak.
Exactly.
So what then are the next steps to help, evaluate?
And one of the interesting things, and this is something that's I've seen in the last few years, so I don't know exactly when it started, but you mentioned all the options are in theory actuarially equivalent. There's actually a sheet when you receive your pension packet, there's actually a sheet that says, okay, single life benefit. And then states, lets you know as a percentage of the single life benefit what all of the other options are on an actuarial equivalent basis. And usually you see the percentages are all real close to 100%. I just looked at one today, though, where the lump sum, according to the pension packet the individual received, was worth 100, on an actuarial basis, was worth 113%. Of that single life benefit. And I think that might partially be due. I haven't had a chance to really fully think that through, because typically you don't see that big a difference.
No.
I think it might have to do with this low discount rate, this low interest rate environment that we're in that enhances these lump sum values.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. So taking the step back, Rod and I are going to next outline for you some of the, we'll call, reasons to take the monthly pension annuity, as Rod indicated, whether it be single life or one of the joint and survivor options. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the reasons why a lump sum might make sense. So, Rod, why don't I turn it over to you, and you can talk a little bit about the annuity option and why that may make sense.
Sure. And again, on big picture, there's no right or wrong answer here. And like we say to people all the time, Jackie, it's what fits the situation. People will ask, should I pay my mortgage off? Should I accelerate payments on my mortgage? Or should I just make the basic monthly payment? What fits your situation? And this is the same thing.
There's a reason it's called personal financial planning.
Absolutely. And a lot of times on a gut level, when I look at an overall situation and look at somebody's pension, I have on a gut level what I feel is probably makes the most sense without doing any financial analysis. But we still go still go through the process of evaluating the decision thoroughly. So reasons favoring the monthly annuity is you can't outlive the pension.
So if I live to 101, they're still going to pay me my monthly annuity?
You live to 101, they lost.
That makes a lot of sense. Absolutely.
Sure. And as healthcare, medical technology, people are living healthier, longer lives.
Sure. Sure, absolutely.
You cannot outlive the pension. And if you have a joint and survivor pension, and your spouse lives or, beneficiary lives to their 105, again, they lost. You won on that one. It's the pension, the monthly payment, it's simple and self-completing. Once you make that decision, the next hardest decision you have to make is what bank account do you want the pension direct deposited in, and how much income tax would you like to have withheld from the monthly payment? So once you make the decision and that pension starts, there really is no more decision making on it. So there's some attractiveness to checking it off the list, knowing you're going to get it every single month for the rest of your life.
Sure, there's no additional thought needed.
No additional thought. Built-in survivor benefits if you're electing a joint and survivor annuity. So you can provide protection to your beneficiary. The investment risk. When you take the monthly annuity, the investment risk lies with the employer and the pension fund to make sure that they're investing prudently and funding that benefit appropriately, so that you don't have to worry about what do I do with all this money. If you have, and this is one we talk a little bit about this with clients. It's one of the harder conversations to have, but maybe health comes into play.
Sure.
If you're in, you have a serious illness, you would definitely want to elect a joint and survivor annuity.
Mm-hmm. It could be something, a situation where the plan participant might not be in good health or have a good health history. Could even potentially have a terminal illness, but let's say the surviving spouse could have excellent health history and, could easily live to age 100. Again, that could easily argue for strongly considering the monthly annuity.
Yep. And the joint and survivor or lump sum, mm-hmm. not at all considering the a single life in that,
sure.
in that example.
Sure.
Or if you have longevity in your family, if you've got a family history, parents and aunts and uncles, and grandparents that live to, live a long time, that could, work in favor of an annuity versus taking a lump sum. And then part of it does come in, part of what comes into play is your overall financial situation. And if you need that pension to meet your essential monthly living expenses, then, in my opinion, you take the pension, mm-hmm. the monthly pension. You don't take the lump sum and take the investment risk and take the responsibility there. You take that amount that you know you're going to have that income every month to help you, maybe along with Social Security, meet those essential monthly expenses. So part of it does depend then on your personal financial situation. What other resources have you accumulated for retirement? Do you have a spouse who also has a pension, and maybe one of you take a lump sum and one of you take an annuity? So all that definitely needs to come into play.
Sure. And it feeds right into then kind of looking at the potential when the lump sum might be more attractive. And it's interesting how a lot of the characteristics are so closely related. You just alluded to the fact that one spouse, if both spouses have a pension option, one could take it, one might not. Mm-hmm. One might take the lump sum. We do see some clients that they've accumulated significant assets outside of their pension benefit. So for those clients, it might make sense for them to take the lump sum.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Absolutely. And, depending on, Social Security benefits, what their spousal situation is. We've even seen clients that it just so happened timing of an inheritance can also, it's very personal in nature. Rod alluded to earlier the lump sum and the interest rate environment. So if you are in a situation where you do have outside assets and it's, a question of should I take the lump sum, now versus waiting, You know, the interest rate environment is one in such that it's favorable that, you know, giving it serious thought, even if, to Rod's point, you might not be at the magic age of 65, as a lot of these pension plans are tied to, it's worth diving into the details, so to speak.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jackie. This if you leave the show with one tidbit tonight... It's that the fact that we're in this low interest rate environment, which is enhancing lump sum values. So if you're, let's say you have retired and you have been waiting to get the maximum benefit. Maybe you retired in your late 50s and the maximum pension doesn't pay to you until you're 62 or 65. And so you've just, and you've had some other resources to live up. Maybe you're semi-retired and you
work part-time.
Took a part-time job, or you've got some other sources of income or what have you. I would go back and look at your pension plan and understand what the lump sum value is today and understand what the risk could be to waiting a year or two to take the lump sum value or 3 years. Because if interest rates rise over the next couple of years, I am sorry to say this, but your lump sum value will go down. We have had years where when the interest rates that are used to calculate these lump sums, just a 1% decrease in the discount rate can increase the lump sum value by 10-15%. Mm-hmm. Just by that.
It's significant.
It works in the opposite direction as well. Sure. So that's a really important point to hit home, Jackie.
Absolutely. So continuing with our thought of when does it make sense to consider a lump sum, as Rod indicated, when you need the pension benefit to cover, you know, monthly expenses. Well, the opposite could be said for electing a lump sum. If you have your essential or basic living expenses covered by outside assets, then a lump sum could be a consideration because you don't need that money right away. One of the advantages of taking a lump sum pension benefit is it continues to be tax deferred. So obviously there's no tax impact to you while you're an employee, or even to Rod's point, mm-hmm. if you retire early and don't take your pension, there's no tax impact. Well, if you take your lump sum benefit, that then typically what we see happen is a participant will roll that over into an individual retirement account. So it continues to have that tax deferred protective wrapper on it.
So let me understand this. Company is willing to send you a big check right now, and you get that check, you don't have to pay any tax on it.
Nope.
As long as you get it into a retirement account within a certain time period.
That's absolutely correct. And one of the big differences is then you are in control of those dollars. So to some of our listeners, I'm sure that's a very attractive feature. I'm sure people out there, Rod, we've seen them as clients. They like to have that kind of bird in hand, so to speak, and they like to be in control. Equally said, we've also seen many of clients that they'd rather not take that financial responsibility and risk potentially. They'd much rather have the security, as Rod alluded to. The monthly annuity is simple, and it puts the financial risk on the employer or the pension company.
Yeah, that investment flexibility is kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You got the potential to grow that money, generate positive returns, but it's maybe not without, you know, without risk. So let me also get this straight. So you get this big check. You put it in an IRA account. Now, let's just say I'm 65 years old. I've got this big check. I've put in an IRA account. I have to start taking it out?
No, you don't have to start touching that until age under current tax law today.
Yeah.
Until age 72.
So I can get a big check, not pay any tax on it, put it in an IRA, invest it, let it grow for 7 years before I even have to start touching it.
Correct. And at age 72, it's a very minimal amount. Mm-hmm. So again, being a very attractive option for somebody who has outside assets and may not need it for a long time.
That sounds pretty powerful and compelling. We have to go to a break, folks, and we will be right back.
connect to WDIY with our new streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi everyone, Rod Young from Valley National here on Your Financial Choices tonight with Jackie Cornelius. Jackie, this has been a great conversation. I can't believe it's been, I think it's been a couple of years since we've done this, so we'll have to talk to Lori about coming a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. We've got a few minutes left in the show, and if you do have any questions tonight, folks, online at yourfinancialchoices.com, click on the Ask Lori, and we will do our best to answer. Otherwise, enjoy the last, 13, 14 minutes of our discussion. So I'm loving the idea of the lump sum that I don't have to pay any tax on, and I can roll it over, to an IRA, and then don't even have to touch it right away and pay any tax on it. That sounds pretty powerful. I know it doesn't, as we've talked, it may not fit every situation. What are some other considerations we should be pointing out, Jackie?
Sure. So I think one of the other important distinctions is when you take the monthly annuity, whether it be single life, joint survivor, whichever option you end up selecting, the other important thing to note is there is no type of inflation adjustment on that benefit. So I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with Social Security, and I'll say most years, not all years, but most years there's what's referred to as a COLA, or cost of living adjustment, that's applied to the Social Security benefit, where it kind of reflects for inflation and whatnot. That does not happen with most pensions. Majority of pensions will say we don't see any type of COLA adjustment. So again, Right. That could argue for taking the lump sum, because as you said, that you can invest that and invest it in an instrument that may potentially keep pace or outperform with inflation.
So let me just make sure I got this straight. So that earlier we were talking about a $3,000 a month pension, mm-hmm. okay? And let's say I'm age 60. And I start that pension. The next year, it still is $3,000 a month, and the next year after that, it still is $3,000 a month. But we all know that our living expenses over time tend to increase. So that is a drawback and of the monthly pension.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Yep.
Sure. And one of the other, I think, important things just to point out, too, is, again, this goes back to who does the financial risk fall on. So as we're talking with the lump sum election, the financial risk falls on you as the plan participant. You now are almost kind of taking that asset outside of the company, and you're taking control of it. So you have the financial risk as far as what you do with those dollars. Mm-hmm. With a monthly annuity, that financial risk stays with the company or the whoever the company would engage to hold those pension assets. So years and years ago, I think people felt very, very secure, more secure potentially with those benefits staying with the company. As we see now, things have changed, things evolve. There is something called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Great. I was going to ask about that.
Sure.
We live in I live in Bethlehem. You're nearby.
We
live
yep.
in the Lehigh Valley. Mm-hmm. We see the steel stacks over here.
Sure.
And we also know that Bethlehem Steel, went, belly up, so to speak.
Sure.
So if I do take that monthly pension, what happens?
Sure. And this is so important because I think so many people think, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'll always, let's go back to the $3,000 example. That's a guaranteed. I'll always get that. Well, not always. There is a guarantee. But it's not, if the company, to Rod's point, let's go back to the Bethlehem Steel example, for those pensions, their plan participants did not get 100% of the pension benefit. So it is, you receiving that monthly annuity is contingent on, we'll say, the health of the company and the ability of them to pay and actually stay in business and have a funded pension.
And so in a terrible event like that, government is there to help a bit?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. And that's this pension benefit guarantee fund, which protects a certain amount of pension. I think it's in the maximum at age 65. I think it's around $5,800 a month. Mm-hmm. If you're younger, it's a smaller
amount
that would, you know, that would be guaranteed. So that's really important to know. I have another question for you. So that example where 65, take the lump sum, don't have to touch it till I'm 72, but I can touch it, right? I can take it out.
Absolutely, you can touch it.
How much can I take out?
You can take out as much as you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
With no 65, no typically the rule is as long as you have met the definition of retirement, and you've rolled it over to an IRA, 59 and a half and above, you're, I want to say, golden to be able to take that. Now, we understand that there's income tax consequences because this is tax deferred, no different than if you're getting the monthly pension. Again, that those dollars are taxable. But yeah, that's another great point because now you have investment flexibility and you also have distribution flexibility.
Cash flow flexibility, even tax planning flexibility.
Sure.
And so, again, the beauty of the monthly annuity, you will never, ever outlive it, and you don't have to take on all that investment risk. Mm-hmm. That lump sum provides so much it's a double-edged sword.
It is.
It's because it's there. And you say, oh, why don't I just go on this trip, and why don't I just buy that car? And so it is a little bit of a double-edged sword, but it provides a lot more cash flow flexibility. It provides, I think, greater tax flexibility. Maybe there's a situation where you could take some of that IRA money and convert it to a Roth IRA and never pay tax on it again in the future. Or who knows?
There's another small point, too. Taking the lump sum, again, it's different for every situation. But it also, I would say, it hedges against premature death. We never like to see this, and you know, it's not even something you can necessarily plan for. So, health does come into play. So, if you know, clients come in and they say, you know, nobody in my family lives past 65. Okay, that would be a family history of, you know, ill health or you know, non-favorable health situation. But then there also is a situation where you have an untimely death, and you know, with a single life or a joint survivor, if, you know, spouses are in, let's say, a car accident. I mean, how often do you see that? Not often, thankfully, but it does happen. That benefit is done. There is nothing remaining then. You know, it could have been, you know, spouses received an annuity for 2 months and they both passed in a car accident. There's nothing then left, so to speak, for children or for additional heirs.
Right.
So we know that is just something else to consider.
That's a good point. Yeah, concern for financial needs of your heirs, wanting to pass on a potential legacy to the next generation. Got it. That's a very good point.
Sure. So why don't we spend some time? We talked about all these different options. Why don't you give our listeners rather some guidance on kind of next steps in helping evaluate? What kind of guidance would you give them?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Jackie. And our listeners can probably tell we think that the lump sum is a fairly attractive option if your plan offers it, and definitely in this, I hate to say it over and over again, like a broken record. You know, definitely in this interest rate environment. So even with all this, it makes sense and so on, we still like to do some financial analysis on this.
Absolutely.
It just makes sense to do the, you know, to do the financial analysis. So what we'll do is we will take a look at the annuity options that are being offered and the lump sum amount that's being offered, and then we'll do a calculation. What is the rate of return that you need to earn on your lump sum amount to generate the equivalent for yourself of that lifetime annuity? Mm-hmm. Okay. And we'll do it, and let's say you're age 65 when you're evaluating this decision. So we'll do we'll say, okay, let's assume you live to age 75. What do you need to you know, earn on that lump sum? Now, I was going to assume you live to age 80, age 85, age 90. Obviously, the longer the time period is, the higher that rate of return. And we refer to that rate of return as a hurdle rate. Mm-hmm. What rate do you need to be able to hurdle over to equal or exceed the annuity?
Sure.
And I mean, if you do it a really short time frame, it's a negative hurdle rate.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, once you're getting out beyond 10 years, you have to earn something on it, you know, beyond 10 to 12 years, mm-hmm. in order to match the annuity.
And that comes back to your point about earlier when you said if you live till age 100 and you've selected the monthly annuity, you've won.
Absolutely, because if we do that math on these lump sums compared to the monthly annuity, and we use 100 as the, you know, the hurdle rate's going to be 8%, something like that, which then we look at and say, okay, if you can tell us
that you're going to live
to 100, if your Sicilian actuary says you're going to live to, you know, live to be 100,
mm-hmm.
Then, you know, by all means,
sure,
take the annuity, because you're not going to be able, on a risk equivalent basis, to generate that kind of rate of return.
Sure.
So we do that. We do these calculations for every single lump sum versus annuity situation that we evaluate, and we should explain it to the client and use that, you know, at least as a little bit of a help in evaluating the decision.
Sure. One other thing, as we're getting closer to our time ending here, just to point out is the situation and the evaluation Rod and I have been going through tonight talks about qualified pension plans or qualified defined benefit plans. Just as a point of reference, there is an additional, we'll say, benefit that's out there that is considered a supplemental pension plan. And for those types of plans, that is typically above the qualified compensation limit. Those mm-hmm. are plans, you know, that go above that. Again, same type of concept. They provide a defined retirement benefit, but it's for dollars that are above what the IRS considers a qualified dollar limit.
Sure.
So the pension benefit guarantee, that kind of that guarantee does not cover the non-qualified pensions.
Right, mm-hmm. right. That is a promise to pay by the employer. You are a general creditor of the company relying on that benefit. You can't roll it over to an IRA because it's not a qualified benefit. That's a really, really good point, mm-hmm. Jack.
And you'll know that when you get either when you get your pension packet or when you speak to your HR department and get your employee benefit statement from them, you'll see the different. It'll, if you do have a non-qualified, it'll break it out on there. So you'll know. It's a separate bucket of money, so to speak.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So we have a few seconds left. So real quick in conclusion, Jackie, educate yourself.
Very important.
Yep. Discuss this with a financial professional. There are certain things you just should discuss with a financial professional, and this decision is one of them. And make a decision that fits your overall situation. Easier said than done. But I'm going to say it one last time. we're in a low interest rate environment, so it's very attractive right now. Great to be here with you, Jackie.
Absolutely.
We've got to tell Lori we want to do this again real soon. Mm-hmm. She'll be back next week. Coming up next, I think Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition. Thank you.